Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Clever Girls Know podcast. This is Bola Shokumbi. I'm the founder and CEO of Clever Girl Finance. The Clever Girls Know podcast is a podcast for women, offering a space for conversations around personal finance, business, life, and living. I'd love for you to subscribe to this podcast, and you can do that everywhere you listen to your podcast episodes. And if you love what you listen to, head on over to iTunes and leave a review so that other amazing women just like you can find this podcast as well. I'd also love for you to stop by clevergirlfinance.com. We have new content on the blog multiple times a week. We have over 30 plus free courses. Plus, when you sign up for a course, you can talk to a Clever Girl Finance mentor for free to get encouragement, motivation, or if you just want to have an open, no shame, no judgment girl talk. Finally, check out our YouTube channel. Just search Clever Girl Finance on YouTube. And if you don't already follow us on Instagram, you can find us at Clever Girl Finance. Okay, so let's get into today's episode.
Hi, Anna.
Hey, Bola. I'm super excited to be here with you.
Oh, welcome to the Clever Girls Know podcast. I am excited to have you on. We're going to be talking about how women can protect themselves financially in romantic relationships. And this is something that I love to discuss because it's an important topic. But before we dive in, please tell everyone who you are and what you do.
Yeah, my name is Ananjay Conte. I am the president and director of financial planning for Re-Envision Wealth. We are a wealth management firm that focuses on working with first-gen wealth builders, mostly households of color that are looking to build values-aligned wealth. I also run a membership community called the Financial Powerhouse, the club, in which we just talk about money topics specifically for women and women of color.
I love that. And so let's dive in. I would love for you to share why, in your opinion, financial independence is crucial for women in romantic relationships.
Yeah. So whenever I'm talking about discussing this topic, I always feel inclined to share a little bit of my personal story. So, you know, my parents are immigrants. My father is from The Gambia. My mother is from Puerto Rico. And, you know, my parents met later in life. Mom had a marriage before she married my dad and had me. And, you know, in that relationship, she suffered a lot from domestic violence. And what prevented her from leaving was because she did not have the education, because she had my sister and brother so young. And she wasn't able to leave because she did not have the economic power to do so. And so this is a topic that is near and dear to my heart, because I just think about my beautiful mother and how kind and wonderful she is. And, you know, I know that there are so many women who, it might not be to that extreme, but they need to feel financial independence and they need to have some sort of autonomy and ability to leave whatever situation is not serving them, whether that be a job situation or a romantic relationship.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I completely agree with you. You know, I grew up observing my mom and her friends. And like you, I learned at a young age the importance of financial wellness for women, because I would sit down and listen to my mom's friends come to our house with suitcases saying they have nowhere to go, they have no money, abusive relationship, they need to get out, they don't have options. And so I definitely agree with you. It's so important for us as women. And so just based on what you observed with your mom and maybe even your own personal journey, what would you say is the most important lesson that you have learned when it comes to protecting yourself financially in any relationship you're in?
Yeah. So I feel very fortunate that I hit the husband jackpot. My husband is an incredible person. And so I don't feel the need to protect myself against him financially. We've been married for, 13 years. It'll be 13 years this year. But I do think, regardless of whether you are in a healthy relationship or not, it's really important for women to understand what's going on with the money. A lot of us come from, you know, more traditional kind of patriarchal societies or cultures where the men are the ones who earn the money, they manage the money, the women are kind of clueless about where everything is and what's happening. And in my, you know, career in wealth management, before I left and started my own firm, I saw many, many older women whose husbands suddenly died. And they were absolutely clueless about everything financially related. That's anything from what are property taxes and I have to pay those, how to pay bills, who the financial advisor is. Maybe they met them once years ago. They don't know where their money's invested. They don't know how much they have. They don't know what's sustainable to spend. And that's a really stressful situation to imagine you're in upon losing your life partner, right? So regardless of the health of the relationship, I think it's so important for women to, even if one person is in charge of that realm, at the very least, having an understanding of where things are, what's going on with them for their own safety and protection.
Yeah, I think at a baseline, it's really important to just have that idea of what is going on in our financial life. And I guess it's not so much protecting yourself, because it kind of sounds like maybe it's a bad relationship, which is a possibility, but it's more like being able to stand on your own two feet, regardless of who you are or are not with. That's the way I look at it, right?
Yeah.
And being able to have a say in your family household finances, or contribute to your family household finances, or at the very minimum, what you just said, be aware of where everything is. I've met women, young women, Gen Z, millennials, who don't really know what's going on with the finances in the relationship, because their partner handles it all. And that sounds surprising, but it does still exist, right? And so, again, it's really important at the very minimum to have an awareness. I remember when I first got married to my husband, and I was trying to gather our finances, I just simply set up a spreadsheet. And I was like, okay, these are all the bills, these are all the accounts, this is everything I need to know. And I had it there. And as things changed, I would make updates to it. So it can be a simple process. You can start a simple conversation with your partner. Doesn't have to be anything elaborate or crazy or an argument, but just getting yourself aware. And I'm not sure if you experienced this observing your parents, especially since your dad is African. In you know, I'm from Nigeria, and a lot of times, especially in my parents' generation, if a woman was to ask her husband about the family finances, it was like, why do you need to know?
Yeah, absolutely.
I'm taking care of the kids and the bills. What is, it's none of your business.
For sure. I totally see that. I think there is that kind of attitude of, I have everything handled and you don't need to worry about it. You just take good care of my kids, which, you know, is problematic for many reasons. I understand there are generational shifts and cultural differences, which I respect. But I think for women nowadays, it's really important to have visibility, right? And that's part of the protection for me. I also think that, you know, even if you have a spouse who is open and willing to discuss finances, there's still, if you are not financially educated or you're not financially aware of how some of these things work, you're still open to risk from my vantage point, because, for example, your spouse might have a really aggressive risk tolerance for their investments and have your 401k and your investments and all of your money invested really aggressively. And if you're a little more conservative, you know, that might make you feel really uncomfortable when you poke your head up and look at things. And so, you know, it's not all about malice. It's often about understanding where everything is from a alignment standpoint, so that you are comfortable and you understand what's happening with your money.
I agree. So I would like to ask you, I guess, two views on this topic. What would you say are some early signs in a relationship that indicates, okay, this unit has a healthy approach to managing their finances versus an unhealthy approach or red flags when it comes to handling financial matters in the relationship?
Oh, there's so many. I did a post of 4 financial red flags in a marriage or in a long-term relationship. And, you know, one of those is being unable or unwilling to discuss financial matters. It's one thing, you know, I'm a mother, I have kids. It's one thing to say, hey, I just don't have bandwidth to talk about this right now. The kids are cranky. They're hungry. I need to go deal with this. Can we find a time to talk about it later or another day? Mm-hmm. That's one thing. It's another thing if the person is completely avoiding the conversation, days and days, weeks and weeks, months and months on end. That's a red flag. I would say being particularly evasive around their income, their expenses, their credit, their debt situation is also one. And this could be, you know, in a new relationship or in a long-term relationship, especially if one person is managing the money and the other is not as involved. And then lastly, I would just say, like, if no money conversations are happening, that's also a really big red flag to me, because I think, you know, money is a really important part of our lives. It helps facilitate the things that we want to achieve. It helps keep us alive because we need money for just about everything in this world. Mm-hmm. And so if folks are not willing to talk about it, that's the same as saying, you know, we're not willing to talk about that other room in the house that's on fire, or mm-hmm. the ceiling is caving in and we're not willing to talk about it. It's a telltale sign to me that there's a dysfunctionality in the relationship that needs to be addressed.
Yeah. And I like that analogy where you say the other room that's on fire, or the house, the ceiling that's caving in, because those are things that eventually become a big problem. And as you are aware, the statistics around marriage, you know, 50% of marriages end in divorce due to money related issues. So it's, even if you're not talking about it, doesn't mean that it's out of sight, out of mind. It is going to eventually become a focal point in your relationship at one point or the other. And so that leads me to my next question about approaching the topic of finances with your partner. How do you approach talking to finances with your husband? And how do you advise other people? What other ways do you advise other people to approach that topic of money conversations with their partner?
Yeah. So, you know, my husband and I have been married a long time, and our position on finances, I think, has evolved and grown over time as we had children, as we bought real estate, as, you know, we grew in our careers. So, you know, at first, I think we mostly wanted to keep things separate, not necessarily because of a lack of trust. We were very transparent. There was not much money to argue about. So, you know, it wasn't like there was one person who wanted a prenup and the other didn't. There was nothing to argue about. But it was mostly because I think my husband and I both recognized that we had some external pressures or circumstances that might put pressure and cause conflict in our relationship. So, you know, being first gen, we have the black tax, right? And I'm sure you've talked about that many times before, where there are expectations for family support. And my husband has a very big family that is very collective, as many Africans are, in terms of, you know, funding things for their family, right? There's yep. the monthly rice, there's the rice money collection for the village, there's the medical collection money for the village, there's education costs. And so I think he really was focused up on making sure that I didn't feel resentful about that, even though I had my own kind of family financial pressures. And on my end, I had a lot of student loan debt, and I felt really strongly that I wanted to pay that myself because, and you know, for good or for worse, for better or for worse, for good or bad, I felt that that was my responsibility to handle. And so we kept things separate for a while. That has evolved over time to, you know, we are mostly joint, a little separate. So we still have that autonomy, and, you know, I can go off and buy expensive jewelry and he's not going to say, what on earth did you spend all this money on? We plan for joint financial goals, and we're really transparent, especially me being a business owner, in terms of income and, you know, what my contributions are going to be to the household and when those things are happening, so that, you know, there's no or not much room for misunderstanding. I think, you know, there's no real right way to do it. I think folks can choose to manage their money however they want, but I do think that transparency and an open and honest dialogue is necessary regardless of whatever tactical financial system you come up with your significant other.
Yeah, the transparency and the dialogue are, they're foundational to being able to have those conversations. And my husband and I, we've been married about the same amount of time as you have. I'm going on, I think, 14 or 15 years this year. I don't know. I should look at the date.
Isn't it funny how you forget? You're like, it's been a long time. I don't know.
But similar to you, we do, you know, joint, some separate, you know, we're not having arguments about what I buy because it's just the way we have things set up. I have the money that I can spend here in my separate accounts. I don't have to explain myself. Neither does he. We have our joint goals, things we want to accomplish for the future, for our family, for our kids, for ourselves. And so it's similar to you. And we have the conversations periodically. And early on in my marriage, I really had to learn how to have the conversation with my husband, because it would lead to arguments, or him feeling like he was being bossed around, or me feeling like he was trying to control the situation. And what I learned was that it boiled down to the timing and the tone. So I realized that, you know, when my husband comes home from work is not the time he wants to talk about money. And I'd be there waiting with my to-do list. We're going to pay for this. We need to save this. We got to do this. And he didn't like being told the decision without being part of the decision, right? And me being the money person, I would be like, this is the plan.
Yes.
Not what do you think about the plan? So there was a bit of conflict.
Isn't that a funny dynamic? I think you and I are similar in that, like, you know, my husband's very smart and understands how money works, but I'm a financial advisor. I'm a certified financial planner. So obviously I have a more nuanced, practical understanding of how these things work. And you talk about personal finances all day, every day. So you are really in the trenches. And that, as a woman, that goes against sort of some norms that a lot of folks have in terms of who manages what. And so it can be interesting when you bump up against those. I also think picking your timing is so important. Yeah. I always tell folks to have money dates. Make sure the kids are away or asleep. Get, you know, a board game or a glass of wine, or sit and relax on the couch for a little bit. Don't just run into it at the end of the day, so that you have some time to really connect and talk things through in a calm, kind of level-headed way.
Yes, yes. You know, and I totally agree with you. And also, some of it for me was just going back to my childhood of what I had observed. I think maybe a little bit of PTSD of, you know, seeing my mom's friends in our living room late at night, no options. And also, you know, my mom got married very young. She was 19 years old to an older guy. And my dad was the household everything, provider, everything, until after my mom had me and decided to go to college in her 30s because she wanted to contribute to the family finances. And so in my mind, I have this fear of not being able to be in control of my finances. And I don't want anybody to control me when it comes to money, or try to. And so that was also a wall for me. Like, you don't tell me what to do. I make my own money. I'm going to do what I want to do. And so getting over that and understanding that my husband and I are a unit, we're a team, we're working together, we have similar ambitions, similar goals for our family, you know, just having those conversations helped. So we're in this place where now, you know, it's casual, it's we rarely fight about money, if ever at all. And we've gotten to that place by understanding each other's timing, language, and tone. And so I always tell people, like, if you're in that space where you're not sure how to approach a conversation, you guys do that love language test and see.
Definitely.
And leverage that as a way to approach the conversation about money.
Definitely. Well, I have a question for you, just as a follow-up, because I had a very similar experience. You know, I witnessed a lot of women in my life, and I heard secondhand, I wasn't even alive at this time, but from my mom, kind of what it was like for her to be so disempowered and at the mercy of someone else. And, you know, there were lots of other women. It's an unfortunate reality that many women suffer domestic violence and abuse, and whether that be financial abuse or physical. And I felt really strongly that I needed to be in control, because I did not want to be vulnerable, and I did not want to be taken advantage of. And I didn't want to find myself with nothing to show for all my years of hard work.
Yes.
And I wonder for you, like, how much of that went away with time and as you all continue to grow as a couple, and how much of it was like having very intentional conversations specifically about money? I'm just curious, because I know what my experience has been, but I'd love to hear from you too.
That's a really great question. You know, I don't think it has ever gone away. I think I've just become more comfortable with having a team player that has the same ideas as me, but isn't going to try to control or minimize the way I feel about money and where I stand in terms of me always having to have options for myself. So for example, something that gives me comfort, peace of mind is having my own get the hell out of whatever account. This is my money that I don't, I mean, and let's put the legal things aside for this. But this is just an account where I have my money and there's no questions about it. And it keeps me comfortable. And it's not obligated to anything that we're doing together. It's just my money. And he knows that it exists, but that's just one thing that helps me feel grounded. Like I can stand on my own 2 feet on my own. And also having control in the sense that I can run my business and I can work. I remember when we were doing our premarital counseling and meeting with the counselor, he specifically asked us, how do you envision managing finances in your marriage? And my husband said, well, he was raised to take care of his family. And so he imagines that he will take care of the bills and I will stay at home and take care of the kids. And I was like, what the hell? No way, never. It became a whole thing. It was a blow up. I don't think we even made it to the next counseling session because we couldn't get past this thing.
Oh my gosh.
I'm always gonna have my own money. I'm not gonna be a housewife. You're not gonna tell me what to do. You're not gonna do.
I totally resonate with that.
And so I think it's just knowing I have the partner to answer your question, knowing I have the partner, but knowing that I still have the liberty to create my own little peace of mind buffer that keeps me in that mental space that, you know what, I am okay on my own. And my dad always told me, you know, never marry a liability. Ooh. And never let anybody be a liability on you in your marriage.
He always told me this. Pops coming through with the wise advice.
Yeah. So, similar experiences. So you are a certified financial planner. You talk to couples. You've seen a lot of different situations. I would love to talk about to prenup or not to prenup.
Oh, my goodness.
What are your thoughts about this?
Oh, I have so many thoughts. You know, I think that it's really important for people to feel as if they have that parachute. What you were referring to before kind of reminds me of a parachute where they have not an out necessarily, but they have something that's going to soften the blow if things go south. And I think when there's a situation where folks come into a relationship with vastly different income or asset profiles, right? Or vastly different preferences in terms of how they manage their money, I think it's important for folks to have a prenup so that they feel as though that other person is not necessarily in it for the money. I know it's horrible to say that folks have that kind of doubt in the back of their head, but I do think a lot of people do when we're talking about a really big disparate wealth level. I think they have that in the back of their head. And so it's really important, I think, for peace of mind and for, I think, that emotional safety around the longevity of the marriage and having that parachute. I personally love prenups and I recommend them to a lot of folks who are in that kind of situation, because what I don't want is for folks who have blended family situations or really big income difference to worry about what would happen should they get divorced. I had a client recently who, you know, runs a very successful multiple seven-figure business, has property, you know, is doing well financially and married somebody who, you know, she's very much in love with, but earns significantly less, has a child, has, you know, some other complicating factors, or that sounds a little bit rough, but not necessarily complicating factors, but has some other life situations that could put her wealth that she's built at risk. And so I recommended to her that she consider it when she told me she was getting married and that they had decided to commit to each other that way. It's not, I don't think it has to be as negative as a lot of people put it out to be. It's really just a difficult conversation or a slightly awkward conversation, just like estate planning, just like life insurance, where we don't really want to have these talks, but it's good for us to do so.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I agree. You know, I think prenups are a good idea. I think postnups are a good idea. I don't currently have either. My husband and I did have the conversation of the prenup before we got married. This time there was no conflict. And we decided that we were both choosing to take this emotional risk to get married, in our culture, we have this informal marriage contract, and mine essentially said no refunds, no returns. But on a serious note, we did have the conversation. We chose not to. If somebody was to ask me, do you think I should get a prenup? I will say yes. The fact that that is a question in your mind that you're asking me, right, after mm-hmm. having discussed it with your partner, then it's something that you should seriously consider a postnup. I also, you know, if it's something that you're thinking about and your financial circumstances have changed, there's so many different dynamics to it, right? For example, I have a friend who is married to an extremely wealthy partner, and she is in line for a significant amount of inheritance. And as a result, they have a prenup in place, right? From a broader family inheritance perspective and the clauses that come with that family inheritance in order for her to get it. So everybody's situation is different and unique, like you said, but there is nothing wrong with having a prenup. It doesn't make you less of a wife or a husband or a partner. It doesn't say I love you any less than I do. It's simply yes. part of your money conversation that you're choosing as a couple. You're choosing to do. And some people will sign the prenup and say, I'm signing this because I want to show you that I don't care. Whatever your decisions are, it's if you're thinking about it, have the conversation.
Absolutely. And just to highlight something that you shared, I think one is, even if your financial situation is relatively similar right now, if you know that you have an inheritance coming of any measure, I think it's really important to consider a prenup. I mean, you don't necessarily have to get a prenup or a postnup to protect yourself financially in the case of inheritance. You know, there is some work that you can do about what types of accounts that money goes into and the titling of it. That's a question for an attorney more, but it really is important for you to be intentional and mindful about it. We've all been in love, crazy in love. Yes, we get it. You never think that you're going to break up. You think this person is amazing and they're always going to be amazing. And they may very well be amazing and always be amazing, but sometimes things go south. And so it's important to think in terms of what if, and I guess remove the emotions from it a little bit.
Yeah. Remove the emotions. Yeah. And then just have an objective conversation with your partner. And, you know, you take it from there. Okay. So I wanted to talk about financial abuse. We touched on it very briefly earlier on. But in your experience, what are some of the key warning signs that, you know, people need to be aware of when it comes to financial abuse? Because I think that this is something that's not talked of as much. We hear a lot about domestic violence, domestic abuse, verbal abuse, emotional abuse, and financial abuse kind of tends to come somewhere in the bottom, even when it's happening, because other things are happening along with that financial abuse. So what are some warning signs that women listening to this podcast need to be aware of when it comes to financial abuse?
Absolutely. I think anyone who's trying to be extremely controlling financially that's a warning sign. That's a huge red flag. So, you know, if when you come back out from, you know, going to brunch with friends or going to the store, and your partner is asking, well, how much did you spend? And why did you spend so much? And, you know, what is that? That's either a sign of financial abuse to me, or it's a sign that you all don't have clear boundaries around spending. I don't want to paint everybody out to be abusive, but I do think there is a line. And if your gut is telling you that this is not okay, then it's probably not okay. I think having very low or no visibility on finances and sort of getting an allowance, it sounds very I Love Lucy 1950s, but there are people who operate that way. It's not the same as saying, I have my checking account, you have your checking account, we have a joint one, and we each get, let's say, an equal amount to spend every month. It's I'm deciding what you are going to be able to spend every month kind of thing. And that's really nuanced, but those are two things that come to mind when it comes to financial abuse that are really problematic. I'll add one more that, you know, if the person is being very controlling, even in sort of one-off situation. So as an example, let's say you have a family funeral to attend and this your significant other is telling you, no, you can't spend that money. We can't afford it. You can't go, despite this being someone that you're close to or a beloved person in your life. That also is abusive. And it may be that you can't afford it, and that's fine. But it has to be more of a conversation rather than dictating and ruling over you.
Yeah, yeah. And, you know, sometimes it is, I agree with everything you said, and sometimes it is mild. I've seen situations of women who, or even observed situation where it's subtle things like, well, you can make that decision when you're earning the money, or I pay the bills in here, so I choose to put off the heater, for example.
Yes.
It's little subtle things like that that you want to be mindful of. And, you know, financial abuse is something that you want to take very seriously. So how do you, I guess the next question that comes to mind is like from a perspective of like a backup plan, an exit plan. This is something that, okay, you're like, I cannot, this is not working for me. I cannot do this. This is becoming dangerous. How do you advise folks to exit these situations? Because a lot of times, because they don't have control of the money, or because their money is being watched very carefully, it's difficult for them to exit the situation or change the situation because it can become physically abusive.
Yes, I understand wholeheartedly. I had someone I spoke to last year who was in a similar situation where the significant other had control of all the money and managed everything in a spreadsheet and was extremely paranoid about, you know, sharing information even with their spouse. It was a very interesting dynamic that I couldn't fully wrap my head around, except that there must have been a lot of like trauma and control there around finances. And in this instance, I just recommended that this person, like where they could, take photos and share whatever information they could. Sure, their spouse might not have been willing to share statements or login details for investment accounts and bank accounts, but at the very least, you can start to have some conversations to get a sense of where things are and how things are divvied up. It's going to require a little sleuthing, but that's one. The second I would say is just to come up with an exit plan. This might be, hey, you know, you are going to plan to leave. And on the day you're planning to leave, you switch your direct deposit and make sure that, you know, that's going into your own account. And at the very least, you have some money as a freedom fund. And then, you know, through divorce or through mediation, you can work through actually getting back your rightful share of the assets that you had together.
Yeah. Yeah. That's a very good point. And I also tell people, you know, share with a trusted friend or family member your situation in the event that they are your backup plan. Like you have to spend a little bit of time with them, which is what my mom ended up being. Her friends would show up with suitcases and their kids late at night because she was a backup plan. And she was happy to do it because these are women that she loved, you know, that she just really cared about. And so don't isolate yourself in the situation alone because it can make it harder to get through from an emotional and mental perspective.
Absolutely.
Super, super important.
Yeah. And to not be ashamed, I think, right? Like, yeah. you know, you're not stupid because this happened to you. You're not, you know, not smart or not as smart as you thought you were. These things can creep up. And sometimes folks don't show the signs from the outset of the relationship. Sometimes it takes time for you to see the person for who they really are. And so, you know, it's only money. As much as money is important and it facilitates our life, it's only money. And as long as you have your health and your happiness and you have a roof over your head and food in your belly, then to me, I think, you know, the money can always be made back. It's not worth beating yourself up over.
Yeah, you can start over. You will make, it's only money. That is so right. It seems like a big deal, but you need your health. You need your peace of mind. You need your sanity. And you will, as long as you can put yourself to work and you get creative, you'll make the money back. So I'd like to talk about situations now that we know are coming up, right? Or we're thinking about. how should women be preparing for major life changes? So, for example, I'm getting married, or we want to expand our family and have a baby, or, you know, I want to get divorced. How should we prepare in those major life changes?
I think the first thing is always to, you know, do some inventory of your finances. I am a huge fan of net worth tracking. I think, you know, if for nothing else, if you have a good app, RIP Mint, but if you have a good app, then you can see all of your financial assets and liabilities in one place. And I know that looking at the numbers can be really triggering or difficult sometimes if you are feeling some shame or apprehension around the amount of assets that you have and whether it's going to be enough for something. But I think the knowledge of exactly what the situation is going to be your first weapon in terms of making decisions. I think that, you know, this goes back to transparency as well. It's important for you to have transparency with your significant other and talk to them about your financial situation and talk to them about your concerns and your worries and, you know, doubts over whether you're able to do something or not, or what your financial picture is going to look like after. That should be a conversation that you can have, even if it ruffles some feathers, even if there is some high emotions in that. You should be able to have that conversation there. And if you can't, and maybe you do not have someone who can help you facilitate that conversation, that's an important kind of red flag, yellow flag, maybe. Maybe not full red. Maybe it's a yellow flag of that there's some work to be done as a household. You know, for any big life decision, I always tell folks to do a mock budget. Mm-hmm. And to say, you know, okay, we're thinking about having another kid. Great. What does daycare cost? Or what does a nanny cost? Or what does it look like for us if one parent stays at home with the baby for X amount of time and the other is working? Going into the details and actually seeing what that's going to look like is so important and so illuminating. I remember when I first got pregnant with my first daughter, who's 10, she'll be 11. You know, that was a light bulb moment for my husband and I, because we were not as wise to go to premarital counseling as you, Bola, but he grew up in a more traditional household.
You're gonna learn it either way.
Exactly. Well, I learned when I already had a bun in the oven, but here we were. You know, he had an expectation that was unspoken, despite me being very career oriented, that I would stay at home with the kid. And so when I started talking to him about daycare costs and health insurance and all of this stuff, he's like, wait a minute, you're telling me I have to pay $2,000 a month for somebody to watch my kid? This is problematic. And I think, you know, it allows you to have those conversations before it's critical. And that's that proactive conversation skill is super important for us to develop.
Yeah, I definitely agree. You know, one of the conversations I had with my husband about this major life change situation or question was kids. How many kids are we going to have? And he wanted to have 3 kids because he comes from a family of 3 kids, and it was a lot of fun growing up. And I wanted to have 1 child because my brothers are much older than me. I'm the youngest. I'm the only girl. Mm. And I might as well have been an only child.
Same.
I had that experience. And he was just not, he just really didn't want to shift on this idea of 3 kids. And I was like, well, I could do 1. But as God would have it, he gave us twins.
Oh, so funny. He said, I'm gonna give you both something. Yes. In the middle.
Yes, everybody calm down.
Yes.
And so that helped. And so it then became, okay, we didn't know we're gonna have twins. And it became, and funny story, I don't think I've ever shared this on the podcast, but when I went to do my first ultrasound, the doctor was like, I see 1, I see 2, I see 3. And I literally had my life flash in front of my eyes. I'm like, three what? 3 of what do you see? But we only end up with 2 babies. But we then had to have the conversation. Okay, we have to pay off for all of this at the same time at once. And then we started planning from there once we knew that we were having twins. So it's worth having the conversation. Sometimes there's conflict in conversation, but you learn your partner, you know your partner, you know them better over time, and you learn how to better have those conversations and resolve those conflicts and you know, but it's really important to have the conversation and talk it through. And sometimes it you need more than one conversation, like topic of kids or, you know, who's going to stay home for whatever period of time, et cetera. You need more time to have the conversations, but not approaching it as a battle or a war, because this is your partner. This is your team player. This is your ace. This is the person you're going through life with. So it's conversation.
Yeah. And I would give the advice to anybody out there that is having kind of some conflict with their spouse around any financial topic or life topic is just to remember that y'all are on the same side. Sometimes it feels like they're trying to kill you by wanting you to have three kids, right? when you only want one. But other times it's really just, you know, you see things differently, and they love you and they care about you, but they also have their wants and desires. It's hard because we know ourselves and we know our limitations or our desires too. But that's just my recommendation. Not everybody is financially abusive. I think it requires transparency and open dialogue and honest communication, but fundamentally just recognizing that you're on the same side.
Yeah. Yeah. And financial abuse, again, there's no assumptions that everybody's a financial abuser. That's not the case, but it's just something to be aware of because it does happen, right? And so you just want to be aware. And so, Anna, this has been so great. I would love for you to share any final piece of advice you have to the women listening, just to help them when it comes to finances and relationships and what they should be thinking about as they navigate their relationships and their financial wellness.
Yes, I've loved this conversation so much, Bola. I will share one thing that I know is really prevalent now. A lot of folks don't necessarily get married, and so they might just live with someone, which is totally fine and no issues. But I think it's really important to understand what your financial protection is in that long-term kind of domestic living arrangement. So I'm a huge fan of cohabitation agreements when the couple is living in the house that one person owns and paying towards the mortgage and paying bills. It's really important to have that protection in place as well, so that, you know, if you split later on down the road, it's very clear who owns what should things go south. I think the one overarching thing I just want to leave folks with is that, you know, the things that you want are on the other side of the hard conversations, are on the other side of the difficult conversations, the hard discussions, the hard tasks to look at your money. And without doing that, you're not able to have that, I think, deep enjoyment and in attaining that goal. And so I just encourage everybody to, like, we put our big girl pants on, we take a deep breath, we just say, this is going to be terrible and I feel like I'm going to throw up, but I'm going to have that conversation that I don't really want to, but I know is good for me. And so I just encourage every woman to have that open, honest, transparent conversation with their significant other so that they can just enjoy their lives together and not worry about money or other life decisions too.
I agree. You know, at the end of the day, when you had your reasons of why you wanted to be with this person, why this person is important to you, for most people, I don't think money was a top criteria for most people. You probably had other things like their personality, their ethics, who they are, you know, how they make you feel. You're not like, well, how much money they have in the bank account, that's going to determine whether I like this person or I feel anything for them or not. Again, most people. So you want to enjoy your relationship, you want to enjoy your partner, you want to enjoy the journey through life. Life is more than money. Money is just something that enables you to live that good life. And so have the conversations, like you said, and the more you have them, the easier they get, and the better you will know how to approach each other to have the conversations where it doesn't become a thing. It's just like, what are we having for dinner?
Exactly. Exactly. It can be neutral. And I just really want everybody who's listening to this to know that any conversation around money can be neutral. Yeah. It doesn't have to be highly charged. And, you know, some of that is going to be working through our own money mindset, but some of that is also going to be, you know, separating the emotions from the facts of the situation. And that's easier said than done. Sometimes you need a professional for that, but it doesn't have to be that hard or that scary. Like, you can do it.
Yes, I agree. Thank you so much. And I always ask people as well who join the podcast, who come on as guests, about their clever girl superpower. So I'm going to ask you, what is your clever girl superpower?
I think mine is that I'm really good at delayed gratification.
I love that.
I said to someone the other day, like, I am the kid who will wait for the two marshmallows, right? And so I think that that served me really well in my personal financial journey and building my career and building a business, because nothing that is good is going to happen overnight, or usually doesn't. It usually takes time and it's intentional effort and sacrifice towards that. And the same is, you know, doing well with money and having a healthy relationship where you can talk about money. It's one of those that is super, super important. But I think that's my clever girl superpower for sure.
I love that. It depends on what it is for me.
I cannot
always delay gratification.
Okay, so I will say, if there's a good song playing and I really want to dance, then yes, I'm going to get up, even though I, you know, whatever. But like, they're for most things, I'm able to say, okay, I can wait. I can do it. I can wait.
That's great. Before I let you go, please tell everyone how they can keep in touch with you so we can include that information in the show notes as well.
Yeah, so in terms of socials, I mostly live on Instagram and Twitter. That's going to be at @ANJIEKONTE. It's my handle, same on both. My website is anandjaikonte.com, and that's where you can find more about working with me and some of the things that I'm up to as well.
Well, thank you so much, Anna, for your time and for sharing your knowledge and insights with us. I appreciate it so much.
Thank you so much for having me, Bola. This was great.
Thank you so much for tuning into this episode, and I hope you enjoyed it. If you've loved the episode, but you don't yet subscribe to the podcast, you can do that everywhere you listen to your podcast episodes. And head on over to iTunes and leave a review so other amazing women just like you can find this podcast as well. Thank you so much for being here, and I'll talk to you on the next episode.